When we talk about using current technology to influence the future, there's nothing more controversial than geoengineering, trying to tweak the Earth's climate to adjust it to our needs. The author Kim Stanley Robinson says the idea was first used in a 1928 science fiction novel called Terraforming Earth.
Ever since then, it's been something in science fiction's vocabulary, and it was picked up, and it was a crucial moment when Carl Sagan got interested in the idea around 1970 from his studies of the atmosphere of Venus. And he began to speculate that Mars is like the perfect terraforming candidate, that it has a lot of water, that it's close enough to the sun that if you got a greenhouse effect going on Mars, you might be able to pump up the atmosphere there and melt the ice that's there into water and make a viable human landscape on Mars.
Terraforming the Earth or geoengineering the climate used to be the stuff of fiction, but as the reality of global warming sinks in, scientists and other thinkers are debating these ideas seriously. Kim Stanley Robinson took it up 20 years ago in a novel of his about scientists who try to make Mars habitable. But in his story, there's an awful lot of bickering about how to do it and how far they should go.
There are a good many scientists from Arms Corps and Consolidated, as well as Tsuburashi, who either claim that scrubbing CO2 would not be difficult, or that a CO2-heavy atmosphere would not be so bad. An ecosystem of mostly plants, with CO2-tolerant insects, and perhaps some genetically engineered animals, would flourish in the warm, thick air. And people could walk around in their shirt sleeves with nothing more cumbersome than a face mask. This set Sachs's teeth on edge, and happily he was not the only one. So he could stay in the seat while other people rose to their feet to challenge this fundamental shift in the goal of terraforming. It's not a jungle planet we're after here. You're making a hidden assumption that people can be genetically engineered to tolerate higher CO2 levels, but it's ridiculous. Very soon it became clear that they were accomplishing nothing. No one was really listening, and everyone had their opinions, which were tightly aligned to their employer's interests. It was unseemly, really.
In real-life geoengineering, Trudy Strolmo is an atmospheric scientist at Yale who studies cirrus clouds. Cirrus are the thin, wispy clouds, and they warm the atmosphere by trapping heat. One of the big ideas she's studying is to seed those clouds with ice crystals, which would cause the clouds to become thinner and disappear.
You actually have to get the amount of seeding right. So if you don't put enough of these so-called seeding particles up into the upper atmosphere, you would get no effect at all. But if you put too much, you could actually have the opposite effect of the desired. You could actually cause a warming rather than a cooling, which would be obviously disastrous. I will add, though, that if this were ever implemented, we would very carefully monitor what was happening, and we could very quickly adjust the amount so that we got it roughly right.
The experts think the cloud seeds wouldn't cause any permanent damage.
They have a very short lifetime in the atmosphere of only a couple of weeks. So whatever you put up there, in a few weeks it will be gone. But when you put things higher up, there are no clouds and precipitation, so the particles can stay up much, much longer. And so a typical lifetime in the stratosphere would be 5 to 10 years. And so whatever you put up there, you're stuck with for a while.
She's referring here to a different plan, first proposed in 1983 and still being studied, to spread sulfur dioxide particles around the planet.
You can think of them as tiny mirrors that would reflect sunlight back to space.
Those particles are meant to simulate what happens after a volcanic eruption.
A classical example is the Mount Pinatubo eruption of 1991, which is thought to have cooled Earth's climate by about half a degree centigrade. For a few years. So in a way, Earth has sort of gone through this experiment itself already and tested some of the effects of it.
That one scares people to death.
Again, the author Kim Stanley Robinson.
One of the things that people immediately point out, and it's very important to point this out, is this is a bad solution long term, because if we keep on making CO2 and just try to bounce sunlight away and think we've accomplish the trick. We've ignored the fact that the CO2, a third of it approximately, lands in the oceans. And if you acidify the oceans, a lot of the littlest creatures with calcium shells might die off. And at that point, when the bottom of the food chain dies off, everything else in the food chain dies off, and we get what they call the jellypocalypse, the jellyfish only in the oceans. A superbly bad disaster.
Some people think that we're a group of mad scientists that want to, you know, play God. I think that most people I know who are working on geoengineering, most scientists want to be very, very cautious. They take the position that they want to study and inform. And so far, you know, very few scientists get into the role of making recommendations and trying to affect policy in any way.
But proposing what's possible will inevitably shape the agenda.
Particularly if some of these geoengineering mechanisms turn out to not be very expensive to implement, you can worry that individual states can simply go ahead and implement geoengineering. Maybe particularly if they feel like they are suffering more than the rest of the globe. And even individuals, wealthy individuals, you can imagine that they could simply decide that they wanted to do something about global warming and go ahead with geoengineering.
In his novel 2312, Kim Stanley Robinson imagines that in the future, people refer to our times here in the early 21st century as the dithering, because we're so bogged down by denial and indecision. He thinks we will become desperate enough to try technological fixes. For the record, though, he'd prefer we go after greenhouse gases at the source. You know, power plants, cars and trucks, us.
Social justice is geoengineering. And in general, like income equality, it's the case that the worst damage to this planet is done by the richest people and the poorest people. Mm. The richest people by hyperconsumption and the poorest people by deforestation and topsoil loss, because they have to try to feed their family that night. They cut down trees. They wreck their soil doing bad ag practices trying to stay alive. So the richest and the poorest are the worst impact on the environment.
And by the rich, we mean you and me and everybody else in America, not just the rich people in America.
Right. Well, U.S. citizens as a whole are like 25% of the environment, of the carbon burn on this planet, even though we're only 5% of the population.
Right.
So, yes, you could make a quick division and say that of the 7 billion people, the top billion and the bottom billion in terms
yeah.
of individual income are the big hammers.
Dramatically tinkering with the Earth's atmosphere or dramatically tinkering with wealth distribution? I'm not sure which sounds more like pie-in-the-sky science fiction.